there's also, you know, the reality that some people in Alberta are kind of warming up to the Prime Minister because he has taken markedly different positions on issues that matter to them, whether it be energy development or climate change measures that he's backed off on. So maybe Mr. Jennerud feels like his riding is starting to move in that direction as well.
Rosie, thank you. The CBC's Chief Political Correspondent Rosemary Barton live in Ottawa. Minister of Industry Melanie Joly is speaking to reporters in Montreal. Let's listen.
Just because it's all made up anyway.
I'm Frank Vaughn. It's February 19th, 2026, and most of you have probably already seen that clip. And of course, the hot take is Rosemary Barton saying the quiet part out loud, even if she's just joking, as I'm sure she's already claimed or will claim. It doesn't matter. Playing so loose with the concept of truth and reality is a grievous sin in our modern times when we need reality more than we need anything else, because the people who are real are now competing with the gatekeeper of AI where everything is fake. But there's so much more going on in that brief little clip. And one of them is this idea that Alberta is moving towards Carney. Couldn't be further from the truth. The West is never going to back the Liberal Party. It's just bizarre to even claim such a thing. And I know there's a couple seats out there, but they're not going to gain strength. This idea, you want to talk about another lie, that Mark Carney has backed off on the carbon nonsense? We're still a committed net zero country. Have you read the Memorandum of Understanding, Rosemary? Of course you haven't, but you understand what's in it. It puts so many conditions on the fantasy pipeline that will never get built, all linked to carbon. Not really sure how that's backing off. And then after they give this fawning coverage and explain away Matt Jennerud crossing the floor and explain away why, or try to explain away how Alberta is moving towards Mark Carney, they cut directly to Joly giving a speech. And this is why I say the Conservative Party needs to be doing far more press conferences and getting out there in front of it. There are people yesterday who said to me that I still haven't figured it out about the Conservative Party. I have figured it out. But I speak and try to speak to the rest of Canada that has not figured it out, that has not figured out the Conservative Party is just not what they think it is, attracting all of these center-left candidates, creating a soft underbelly, which Mark Carney, whether you love him or hate him, is successfully harvesting now like a farmer harvests a ripe crop, a crop grown by Conservative Party leadership, whether you like it or not. Now, I want you guys to listen to this speech, or this comment, I should say, that Mark Carney is giving to the press, and close your eyes. And imagine if it was Pierre Poilievre standing up in front of the pulpit saying these words. I think the reaction of left-wing Canada would be very different than it is when Mark Carney speaks. Let's listen.
At pretty much every stop during the election, you referenced doubles up and saying that was going to be the strategy you take with the Americans. You also consistently said that Donald Trump was trying to break us so he could own us. Your new argument today is that Canadians should accept basically the best of a bad deal. What's been the change?
I reject the premise of that question or your characterization of what I'm saying. We have the best deal with the United States right now. Okay? We have the best deal. Look at the numbers. Our tariff is 5.5%. We have 85% of our goods are free trade. It's not what we used to have. Nobody has a deal with the United States that they used to have. Nobody does. They have fundamentally changed. It's their right. We respect it. They have fundamentally changed their trade policy. They have new objectives. And they haven't just talked about those objectives. They put in place tariffs. And they have signed a series of trade deals, including with the European Union, including with others, that have put those into effect, okay? So we're in a position where we have held out, not signed a deal that we don't agree with or that we don't think is in the best interest of Canadians, but and focused on, and we will remain focused on those strategic sectors, to the best interests of Canada first. Of course, America will focus on the best interests of the U.S.
And once again, there's a lot going on in that clip. First off, I'll pay Carney a compliment. He has a very calm and almost soothing voice. And that's how he gets away with some of the contradictions that he can make within a single sentence or a couple sentences. He can contradict himself And he gets away with it with most people. This is how the big red machine is currently and successfully fooling the Canadian public. Trudeau did this as well. He talked very calmly and he talked in that voice that all of us grew to hate. Carney's a different brand of that. But he uses the phrase Canada first, putting the interests of Canada first. That is something a conservative could never have said 2 or 3 years ago, along with displaying the flag. We were all told that the flag was a symbol of racism and violence. And the phrase Canada first was attacked. You couldn't put Canada first. We're a post-national state with no core identity. How could we ever put ourselves first? But here he is doing that. And after campaigning on this emergency, this imminent threat to our sovereignty, there he is in August, telling the truth, saying that we have the best deal in the entire world with the United States. He admits it. That very same deal, subsequently, post-August, they're now telling us. Stephen Harper is now telling us, even to a lesser extent. So is the Conservative Party of Canada, because they're failing to identify that it's Canada that has torpedoed this relationship. It's not all on the United States. It's not all on Donald Trump. This is the same deal, the best deal, described by Carney, that they're telling us we can live without. And the Americans are listening. This from today. The headline on screen is Trump reportedly mulls shaking up North American trade pact, leaving Canada on the outs. People don't understand your old age security, your ODSP, your public sector pensions, and the very purchasing power of your dollar, because all of the things that I just listed and many more depend on the purchasing power of the Canadian dollar. There is only one way the government could fight such a disaster for the country, and that is mass-scale money printing, which will trigger an inflationary surge like you've never seen before, and socializing the private sector to manage and switch Canada to a managed economy. And I feel like Stephen Harper, Mark Carney, all of our politicians, Doug Ford, they're warning us. The belt tightening that they're talking about and people can't seem to hear, the higher taxes and the declining social programs, they're telling you that they're okay with this. And if the Americans are paying attention at all to our media coverage, to the kinds of advertising we're putting out on our radio waves, to the statements of our politicians, both at the federal and provincial level, we're doing everything we can to further irritate them ahead of the renegotiation of the most important trade arrangement that Canada is in with the world, that is irreplaceable, and that we are totally dependent on, and nothing's going to change that. For 40 years, long before Trump came along, your politicians in the Liberal Party and the Conservative Party have gutted this country. They've sold out our manufacturing. They've sold out our independence. When my father was 20 years old, it was 1966, 1967. Back then, all the local farmers used to produce tomatoes, peas, and carrots, potatoes, and all of the staples that you find in your grocery store. And we had canning factories, and we could feed ourselves. Canada could feed itself. And then in 1966 or 67, whenever the meeting was, I have the jacket just over there that he bought for that meeting. He goes to a meeting of the wholesale buyers, and they unceremoniously tell every single Canadian farmer at that meeting, as well as farmers across the country attended similar meetings, they're no longer going to buy Canadian produce. They're going to get it from California and Mexico and go do something else. And they bankrupted the entire produce sector of the Canadian economy. It was a huge, catastrophic change that we can't just rebuild overnight. We are not positioned to simply retool the country because there is no desire. Politicians have been selling it out this entire time. It's not Trump's fault. And we're doing everything we can to irritate him. And if he's paying attention at all, if the Americans are, it's not even just Trump. If the Americans are paying attention to the absolute mass of bad things that we are saying about them, the movement, the so-called elbows up movement, what incentive do they have to actually treat us well in these negotiations? They now have free access to cheap Venezuelan oil. They might just shut down those pipelines that are going south from Alberta. I hope not. I hope the work that Daniel Smith and Scott Moe did when they went down to Washington to discuss life with our peers on the other side of the border. I hope it made a lasting impact. I hope they'd be willing to go again and try and save us out here, because the actions, and I warned about this months ago, the actions of Ottawa, the actions of the Eastern mindset, let's say, are putting the Western provinces in a position where we will suffer the most for the decisions of people who don't even live here. And it's not just that they don't live here. They're also happy to extract their share of the production and of the value that the Western provinces produce and take it, giving nothing back except grief. How many times just this week have I been told that it's the Western conservative mind that is the problem with conservatism in Canada? How many times have we been told by Pierre Poilievre that the Federation is great, that Ottawa is best serving the interests of Canada? Stephen Harper, the so-called Western Prime Minister, is telling us all that we have to suffer. What a terrible political message. And yet so much of the public is swallowing it. And we have Rosemary Barton telling us that Carney's popularity in Alberta is growing, and we have polling companies coming out suggesting that his approval rating is approaching 60% in Alberta. I don't believe it. I don't believe that there's that many people in Alberta who can't see through the fiction that was the memorandum of understanding about a pipeline that will never be built. There's only one game in town for Western Canada, and that is the business that we do with the United States, and it's always been that way. Where is the leadership wanting to tell the truth? Remember, they came out the gate strong before Carney was fully enthroned. They went down there and they tried to talk to the Trump administration. Daniel Smith went to Mar-a-Lago, posed for pictures with Kevin O'Leary and Donald Trump. What happened to that? It seems we came back and we've circled a burning wagon. At any rate, you can count on your conservatives to be worried about the right thing. Here we are. We have a member of parliament, Leanne Rood, Middlesex, London, Conservative Caucus. She's smiling away and she's got a petition, E7025, to ban MPs. Let's just read this. In Canada's parliamentary system, MPs are elected to represent their constituents under a party banner, but unrestricted floor crossing can erode voter trust amid rising political corruption and scandals. I don't disagree with the statement. Recent crossings, such as those by Conservative MPs to the Liberals, have occurred without the original party straying from its platform, raising concerns of opportunism over principle. There isn't much of a platform there, but I digress. Voters deserve immediate accountability when an MP switches to another party midterm, potentially altering Parliament's balance without endorsement. I don't disagree. Allowing MPs to sit as independents preserves conscience without triggering elections. But joining another party should require voter confirmation. Why should switching parties, or why should they be allowed to even sit as independents? It should automatically trigger a by-election. If you're elected under a certain banner, under a certain set of ideas, and you decide to abandon those midstream, it should trigger an election. But this problem actually goes much deeper. It's already been enshrined in Canadian law, in the courts, where a constituent decided to sue a sitting member for breach of contract because that member made promises and then breached those very specific promises as soon as they got in office. And the courts, which Canadians have no influence over, none whatsoever, decided that a sitting MP has no requirement and the public has no expectation that they will keep their promises. Once you elect them, they can do whatever the hell they want. They can lie. They're not culpable. They're not liable. And in this country that we live in, you can't even primary them. You're just stuck with them, and they can cross floors. So anyway, it's not that I disagree with the petition, which has so far garnered 42,000 signatures. But as usual on this channel, we have to have a history lesson. This is Bill C-306 from back in 2012. This was introduced by Matthew Ravignat, an NDP member. It was a private member's bill. These don't often become law. That is true. This enactment provides that a member's seat in the House of Commons will be vacated and a by-election called for that seat if the member, having been elected to the House as a member of a political party or as an independent, changes parties or becomes a member of a party, as the case may be. A member's seat will not be vacated if the member, having been elected as a member of a political party, chooses to sit as an independent. Very similar to what's being proposed in this petition, but this petition isn't even a bill. It's just a useless petition that's not going to go anywhere. But it's good to remember that we had an opportunity to actually vote on a bill, and here's the NDP, back when they were the official opposition, and they almost universally voted in favor. And I think it's more than fair. If a politician creates or changes political affiliations midstream, why not have a by-election? You know, elections are fairly cheap. When you're blowing $100 billion a year in a moment when we're so-called not in a crisis, in excess of what you take in, you're borrowing, the cost of a by-election is super cheap. And it's a good time. It's the one time you get to interact in the very limited, artificial way that you get to vote in this country, because it is artificial. You don't elect government, as I've said before. You elect a bunch of parliamentarians who are pre-screened and pre-selected by people who sit on boards like the Conservative Party Fund, who never stand in elections, or are retired politicians who interface with the donors and interface with the elite class in Canada, and they decide who gets to run, and the people who run have long agreed as to what they will do. They're not representing you, they're representing the interests of their party. And your choice is restricted and controlled, and not even the NDP really tells the truth about that. It's incredible, when I ran in 2019, how ignorant the NDP and Green candidates were as to how things really work in this country. But here they are, back in 2012, when they had some semblance of identity, all voting yes. And of course, as expected, the Liberals said no. The Greens, dear Aunt Elizabeth May, our favorite wine drunk, said no. The Bloc Québécois, which was devastated back then, said no. And of course, we have the Conservative Party of Canada. There's a couple names on here I want you to pay attention to. Pierre Poilievre voted no. And up here a little higher, Maxime Bernier voted no back when he was still a very powerful member of the CPC. Don't forget it, because he is very key to the sellout of Canada to China. He was the champion and architect, and he has never taken ownership. He just, like the Liberals, blames Harper for everything, even though he was Harper's willing second in command for quite the stretch in Parliament. History is important, folks. They had an opportunity to stop floor crossing as a means to create a majority, and they all voted it down. This petition will go nowhere because they all do it. Because if they let this go, a means of control, not control of Parliament or government, but control of the parties, the screening system that sets Parliament up to rubber stamp the government into place, because the government's the Prime Minister and the Cabinet and the Governor General. Parliament is not government. That screening system would weaken. The last thing these people want is for you, the Canadian citizen, to have any more say or power. They do not want citizens empowered. They want subjects, all of them. And I know it's old news at this point, but I'm going to throw it in here at the end anyway. Who do we pick? In light of Trump looking to cut us out of what Carney describes as the best trade deal between the United States and anyone in the world, in light of Trump looking to cut us out, make a separate deal with Mexico, which I think will go down, you see the changes that are going on in Latin America? Peru's political changes, Argentina's political changes, the change that's being forced on Venezuela. You can bet that Mexico's next. You can bet there's going to be something that happens with Cuba. Things are being rearranged. There's also the fact that it does look like, in my mind, when you redeploy hundreds of transport aircraft that can support troops and resupply, when you have the carrier group of the Gerald Ford heading back to the Middle East, you've already got a carrier group in situ, and you're moving assets that support ground deployment into place in the Middle East, it does look like the Trump administration is going to do something with Iran. We're talking about a lot of assertive behavior. The United States trying to rework the entire chessboard. And here we are in Canada, doing everything we can to aggravate and inflame these people, as well as, I mean, we should talk about the foreign mercenary thing. We'll include a segment on that. But first, Janice Charest to be Canada's top trade negotiator during the CUSMA review, because we have to reorder the acronym. That's how we assert ourselves, with acronyms. That's Canada now. That's our strength. And soon it will be a foreign mercenary strength. We will have, you know how you see in Tim Hortons, in the malls, in the airports, you see how it's all new Canadians, so-called new Canadians, that are doing the security work everywhere? They're going to extend that to the military next. And they're going to be loyal to whoever's cutting checks. It's going to be like a mercenary army in Canada. And I don't know why, but the elbows up people who seem to say they love Canada, they love the virtue of draping themselves in the flag, even as the people who are telling them to put the flag on are selling this country out at an accelerated rate. And so we're going to send the architect of the usage of the Emergencies Act, something that the right in the United States and the Trump administration viewed the Freedom Convoy as something beautiful. The podcasting scene, they saw it for what it was a freedom movement. Those people went to Ottawa to restore your freedom. When they danced, and I'll admit it, I wept. When I saw, I couldn't get there. I wanted to get there more than anything, but I couldn't do it. I was preparing for my move west, and I was in a lot of pain. I was in a bad place at that point, physically. But when I saw the dance parties happening in the streets of Ottawa, I wept. Because of all the things they took away our ability to just have a good time. That's what the Freedom Convoy represented. And there's many saner people than the majority of Canada who saw it for what it was. And one of those people is Trump and the people around him in the administration. And so it's an added insult. You see, that's all Canada's doing right now. We're rubbing salt in the wound in our relationship with the United States to our detriment. The United States, this is just another pinprick. This is just another thing that they have to deal with. This is just another stack of paper on the desk. But for us, it's survival. And we're doing everything we can to torpedo one of the greatest arrangements in the history of the world. Sending her, it's just another insult. First, my tweet. Months ago, I predicted the government would lean more on foreign troops to staff our military, that what there was of the Canadian Army was rapidly becoming a foreign legion, which will have far less of an issue in an emergency if turned inwards, if turned against Canada. And here we are. Take a listen.
Today, we are introducing new categories designed to meet and support Canada's evolving needs and reflect our government's determination to attract the best talent to Canada. And finally, we are creating a new category for skilled military recruits, to attract highly skilled foreign military applicants. Eligible recruits with a job offer from the Canadian Armed Forces, including doctors, nurses, pilots, can be invited to apply for permanent residence. They will be subject to the same security and all military requirements. This new category will support our government's commitment to strengthen our armed forces, to defend our sovereignty, and to keep Canadians safe.
Now, it took me a moment to collect myself. People say I hate Canada as I talk about separatism, or I compare and contrast the Constitution of the United States with our institutions and our charter and conclude that the Constitution is objectively better. I love our people. I love our land. And I talk about all the time how these people, these politicians, have been undermining this nation for decades. But when I listen to this clip, it is one of the final nails in the coffin. We're going to bring in foreign mercenaries, essentially. We're going to give them permanent residency. We're going to put them in the military, and they're calling that defending sovereignty, not staffing it with our own people. We're going to bring in foreigners to protect Canada's sovereignty. It doesn't get much more Orwellian than that. And it breaks my heart that this is what we are and this is what we allow. and that because of the big boogeyman that is being dangled in your face, the big orange man that Carney likes to put in your face, they're putting the final nails in this thing. And you know something? Carney, in his debate, when he was running to become prime minister, he rightly identified China as our greatest strategic adversary. They've overrun our country with drugs. They've overrun our country with crime. They have driven affordability. They were the root of the affordability crisis in real estate. China's operated police stations on our soil. We have been kind enough to offer them Arctic training on our soil. Our strategic enemy, as identified by the prime minister. Can people not hear? And now the prime minister is trying to figure out how we can lean on them to replace the United States, something we can't do. But these foreign mercenaries that they're going to bring in as permanent residents will also be Chinese. This is a big open door to the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, the military of the Communist Party of China, to send their military people to Canada to directly take over our army. And you elbows up, morons, pardon me, I've been using those words more lately. I'm a bit frauds. I've been calling people idiots, I've used the word stupid, and I've used the word moron a lot. And I apologize. When I advise people to control their speech, to make the best use of their free speech, I'm not a man on a mountain. I'm not the wise man speaking down to everybody. I'm talking about a goal that you should pursue to maximize the effectiveness of your communication. And I have to admit, my own has been frayed lately. I've been using those words. But it is moronic to do a chicken dance, to embrace the slogan of elbows up, while the government and your so-called Canadian heroes that you support are up to this, is the height of moronic thinking. And if it doesn't change, there's not going to be anything left. And we might just get ourselves noticed by the United States enough that we find that they do have to intervene in Canada. And it won't be their fault. It will be ours. I'm Frank Vaughn. I probably need, I wouldn't say a vacation, but I probably need a break from all this. But I'm not going to get one, because it comes at you every single day. And even if I don't make content, I still feel the need to keep going, to keep working, to keep reading, to keep understanding. At any rate, if you like the work, please consider supporting it via the website, and I'll see you in the next one.